This episode is sponsored by Celestron, manufacturer of high-quality telescopes and an industry leader in developing exciting optical products with revolutionary technologies.
I'm Kelly Beattie of Sky and Telescope magazine, and tonight we're going on a tour of the stars and planets that you'll see overhead during March. This month, we'll experience an equinox, witness the oddly named Worm Moon, clock your interest in the switch to daylight time, check out Three Worlds at Dawn, and focus on Sirius, the real star of the evening sky. So go ahead, throw on a warm coat, and head outside with me for this month's Sky Tour. March is a month of major transition for Earth. So before we start looking up at the sky, let's take a moment to visualize our home planet spinning in space. Compared to its orbit, Earth's spin axis is tipped by about 23 degrees, so the northern hemisphere tilts toward the sun during its summer and away from it 6 months later. But what happens in between? Ah, that's the equinox, the two times each year when the sun shines directly down on the equator. That happens next on March 20th at 5:58 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. The March equinox signals the beginning of spring in the northern hemisphere and the start of autumn south of the equator. But there's far more to it than just that. Equinox comes from the Latin word equinoctium, meaning equal nights. So, on this date, day and night everywhere around the globe are both 12 hours long. And check this out. On the equinox, the sun rises due east and sets due west, no matter where you are. Next, let's take a look at the moon. As in February, the lunar phases in March fall more or less in sync with the calendar. The month opens with the waning crescent moon disappearing before dawn, with new moon on March 6th. A few days later, it reappears low in the west after sunset as a thin crescent that's waxing or growing in width. First quarter follows on the 14th. Then, on the night of March 20th, look for the full worm moon. That's a weird name, right? It comes from Native American folklore, which reminds us that frozen ground begins to soften during March, and earthworms appear, inviting the return of the robins. After that, the moon will slip from the evening sky, and you'll need to stay up late or get up early to spot the last quarter moon on the night of the 27th. Speaking of staying up late, March is a bittersweet month for us sky watchers, because clocks will spring forward into daylight savings time for much of the northern hemisphere. Daylight time can be a bit of a nuisance for those of us who love the stars, because it means the sky doesn't get dark until well into the evening hours, especially in midsummer. Making matters worse, the date for all that time shifting varies. It's March 10th in the U.S. and Canada, 3 weeks later, March 31st in Europe, 4 weeks later in parts of Mexico, except, of course, for border towns like Tijuana, which switch with the U.S. on March 10th. And because autumn is approaching for our friends down under in Australia, they'll switch back to standard time, but not until April 7th. If all this sounds confusing, well, it is. Who's to blame for this mess? You probably heard that Benjamin Franklin was the first to propose a seasonal switch to daylight time. But that honor actually belongs to Englishman William Willett. He was an avid golfer who wanted to spend more time after work working on his putting. So, in 1907, Willett published a pamphlet titled The Waste of Daylight, in which he proposed advancing the clock during summer months. A golfer! You can read my grumpy rant about daylight savings in my blog post titled Bah Humbug on skyandtelescope.com. Okay, let's get back to our tour of the sky. Next up, we're going to take a look at Three Worlds at Dawn. I'll concede that the switch to daylight time has one advantage for sky watchers. During March, for most of us, the sky is once again dark when we get up each day. And this is great news, because a beautiful pre-dawn sky beckons. In early March, Venus rises about 2 hours before sunup, but it sinks a little closer to the horizon week by week. It's very, very bright, but you will need a clear view toward the east to see it. Venus serves as the anchor for a terrific trio of planets now on display before dawn. Try this with me. Clench your fist, then extend your arm. Believe it or not, that clenched fist makes it easy to find your way around the sky. Let's try it out, okay? First, spot Venus, and then look about two fists, roughly 20 degrees, to its upper right. The bright star you see there is actually the planet Saturn. Now go two more fists to the upper right, and you'll come to an even brighter planet. That's Jupiter. As the days and weeks go by, watch how Venus stays put, more or less, as dawn twilight starts to brighten. But Saturn and Jupiter will drift higher up and farther to the west. In a few months, you'll be able to spot them soon after midnight, and by June, they'll be around to greet us as soon as the sun goes down. All right, that's it for the pre-dawn portion of our tour. The evening sky is where we're headed next. The only planet we can easily see after sunset is Mars. About an hour after the sun goes down, face southwest and look almost halfway up. There's the red planet, sitting by itself without any other bright stars close by. Now, if you're catching this podcast in the first days of March, you're in luck, because there's one more planet to be found. About 30 or 45 minutes after sunset, look very low in the west. If the sky is clear, you'll get a glimpse of the planet Mercury. After March 6th, it'll be too low and too faint to see. So procrastinators beware. As twilight fades and the night progresses, face the direction where the sun set earlier. Now make a quarter turn to your left and just look up. Wow, there they are, the most brilliant stars of the winter arrayed before us in all their glory. Probably easiest to spot is Orion the Hunter. That diagonal row of three stars you see is his belt, and it's unmistakable. These three stars have names. On the left is Al-Nitak, which means the girdle in Arabic. In the middle is Al-Nilam, which translates as string of pearls. And Mintaka is on the right. It means the belt. I talk about Orion throughout the entire winter season because it's so large and easy to spot, but also because the Hunter's Belt is something of a signpost on the celestial highway. Those three stars all lie very close to the celestial equator. If you took Earth's equator and expanded it out into space, it would pass right through Mintaka. To the belt's upper left, at Orion's shoulder, is the bright star Betelgeuse, or Betelgeuse if you wish, and to the belt's lower right is Rigel, which marks his foot. Let's use Orion to make some other easy identifications. Higher up, to Orion's upper right, are the bright star Aldebaran and the constellation Taurus, the bull. To the Hunter's upper left are the stars of Gemini, with the twin stars Castor and slightly dimmer Pollux. Higher still, almost overhead, is the bright star Capella. Now look to Orion's immediate left, and you'll see Procyon, the alpha star of Canis Minor, the little dog. There's not much to Canis Minor, actually. It's one of the smaller constellations to begin with. Procyon and the dimmer star to its upper right are pretty much the whole show. To me, this constellation looks more like a hot dog than a four-footed hunting companion. So let's go find its bigger buddy, the alpha dog of the winter sky. Using your outstretched arm again, measure almost three fists to the lower right of Procyon. See that gleaming bright star? That's Sirius, sometimes called the dog star. On a cosmic scale, Sirius and Procyon are practically next-door neighbors to our solar system. They're only 9 and 11 light-years away. Sirius is the brightest star in the entire sky, aside from our own sun, of course. How soon after sunset can you spot it in the twilight? Now keep an eye on the horizon directly below Sirius. It's located due south at 8 p.m. on March 1st, and, thanks to the shift in summertime, it'll also be due south at 8 p.m. on March 15th. Orion might be the most recognizable constellation, but Sirius is the real star of the winter season. And it's visible throughout much of the year if you know when and where to look. Sometime in August, Sirius first becomes visible low in the east just before dawn. 5,000 years ago, because of the slow wobble of Earth's spin axis, this first pre-dawn appearance would occur in late June, and ancient Egyptians knew that this first glimpse of Sirius came just before the annual flooding season of the Nile River. Egyptians worshipped the star as the spirit of the river, and they were the first culture to depict the star as a dog. Fast forward a few thousand years, early sky watchers noticed that the dog star rises and sets with the sun during late July, an arrangement in the sky known as a conjunction. Some cultures believe this pairing caused the heat from Sirius to be combined with the heat of the sun, creating the hot and sultry weather that often comes in late summer. So they named this period of time, from 20 days before the conjunction to 20 days afterward, as the Dog Days. And that's why today we still refer to this hot, sticky weather as the Dog Days of summer. Let's take one final look up at the sky on these March evenings. Focus on Betelgeuse for a moment. Remember, it's the shoulder of Orion to the upper left of his belt. Now imagine that Betelgeuse is at the center of a huge six-sided hexagon in the sky. At the very top is Capella. Going around clockwise, we come to Aldebaran, then Rigel, then Sirius at the bottom. To its upper left are Procyon, the twins of Gemini, and finally back to Capella. Congratulations! We've just traced out what sky watchers know as the winter hexagon. All of these stars are bright enough to show up even if you have a lot of light pollution where you live. So take a little extra time to enjoy them each night in March as we transition out of winter and into spring. That's about it for this month. If you want more sky watching tips, check out skyandtelescope.com. In particular, you'll enjoy Sky at a Glance, which offers great star and planet gazing activities on a day-by-day basis. If you haven't already subscribed, you can find this Sky Tour on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen. And please leave a rating or review. It'll help others find the show. And if you want to explore the solar system and universe more deeply, please do check out the full line of binoculars and telescopes available at Celestron.com. Sky Tour is a production of F&W Media Studios and is produced by me, Kelly Beatty, with a big assist from consulting producer Ron Doyle. Our executive producer of podcasts is Jared Mayer. Join me next month when I'll take you on a safari. We'll look for the celestial carnivores that are stalking up in the eastern sky. Until then, I wish you clear skies.